The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and do not necessarily reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, she walks the talk. Mary Lou Connors has a heart for Haiti. A retired nurse, she's been devoting herself to the needs of that most beleaguered country. And then when she's back home, she's devoting herself to the needs of our own. We'll spend most of the episode with Mary Lou, and then we'll check in with someone else who walks the talk, literally. Rod Dornan, the 72-year-old man with scoliosis and spinal stenosis, who's still making national news by walking his neighborhood every day for 2.2 miles in support of immigration reform. He'll tell us how we can join him one day this month. Back in a moment with Mary Lou.
Many dogs and cats spend endless days indoors staring at the wall, living for the moment when you will come home and tell them you love them, take them out, and make a fuss over them. Dogs and cats need physical exercise and mental stimulation, things to do and think about in order to be healthy and happy. Please set time aside for them and give them a real life and real love. For more information, please contact People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals at 757-622-PETA or helpinganimals.com. That's helpinganimals.com.
Welcome, Mary Lou Connors.
Thank you for this invitation and this opportunity to share our work.
Such work. And really, you were retired. So what are you doing? You're probably working harder now in various capacities than when you were a full-time nurse.
You know, I did work for 50 years, and I have absolutely no regrets as a full-time nurse. But now in retirement, I've been retired for a little over a year, I am just amazed at how quickly the day goes by when you're doing your own timing.
Yeah.
And but it's joyful. It's joyful. There isn't a night where I go to bed and I start thinking about the day and I just can't go, wow. So retirement is also a blessing.
I'm looking at your beautiful face. You really do see, I don't know what you used to look like in your working days, but you look
younger.
Radiant. Weren't we all? So our mission today is to talk about your three pursuits. One being Haiti, helping in Haiti. The other being helping refugees. And finally, the last, your work at the women's prison. Wow. Let's start with Haiti. How long have you been helping in Haiti, and what is the nature of your helping?
I started going to Haiti in 1983 by invitation of a nursing professor when I was at St. Joseph's College, which is now University of St. Joseph. And we spent 2 weeks in a mountain village and had a medical clinic. I was greatly distressed when I realized there was no health care in this area, and when we ran out of medicine, there was nothing more we could do. And yet there were probably 200 people still waiting and hoping. And when I had to go into the midst of them and announced that we had no more medicine, and I saw the dismay on their faces. I saw hope turn to dismay, and it just was so very painful, and yet caused me to get the idea that maybe we could do more, maybe this needs to continue in some way. So that's how it started back then, and I've been going since 1983 every year, but in the last 6 years, we've been going twice a year. And now we're going to a different area in the country as a result of the earthquake in 2010. Many people left Port-au-Prince, where there was so much death and destruction, and they went up to this dry mountainside up called Carfou, up the mountain, and it's called Rivière Froide, which means cold river. There is a compound up there run by Catholic Brothers, Haitian Catholic Brothers, and they're not a wealthy compound, a group, but they're trying really to help their own people. And when I was offered the opportunity to go there, and it was really a startup, I thought, well, let me give that place a try, because where I had been going in Jeremy was well established, and they had a good outpatient public health facility. They were doing lots of education, and they were really doing very well. And I knew that my friend there could be a consultant if I could see a need and we could start to get some health care delivery accomplished with the local health agents. And so with a medical team, the other nurses and physicians are mostly from Long Island. I was the only Connecticut gal, but managed to fit in. Yeah. We go twice a year and have a medical clinic wherein we'll see upwards to like 2,000 people.
Woo!
Yeah.
Over the course of how long?
Over the course of about 7 days. Now, we're very limited. We don't have x-rays. We don't have laboratory. But we do work with the local village health agents. We've had a local Haitian physician with us so that we stay linked to what, you know, because as we leave, you know, who's going to follow up, what kind of health care, and how can we send people for further care? So what we're trying to do is help patients help patients.
Ah, very good.
Yeah.
We're the Teach a Man to Fish thing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And we're an offshoot of a larger organization, and that's called Fryer Suppliers. They started at least 10 years ago and went as builders from around this country, but again, mostly organized out of the Long Island area. And these Fryer Suppliers, the gentlemen came to do building. Well, they started by building latrines, because there's no infrastructure on this mountainside, you know, and the cholera epidemic was raging. So in order to help stop the spread, they started with latrines. Now, Haitians would dig the holes. And when I say dig holes, 12 feet deep
wow.
in rock.
Oh.
I don't know how they do it. It's all hand done. But they want it, and they want to help themselves, so we want to help them. So we've done the Fryer Suppliers over 400 latrines in this area. Well, we're proud that this is being done and that they've come off of the cholera list.
Your help is financial?
Building supplies. And at first, you know, we're the supervisors for how this can be done
okay.
and done correctly. But Haitian men are hired. Haitian men are hired to as helpers, and it's probably, for most of them, the only job they have all year. And they're very capable. They're very hardworking. There aren't many Americans that can carry 50 pounds of cement on their head straight up a mountainside.
Oh,
you know,
that's such an image.
Oh, it's wow. amazing to see. It's amazing, amazing. And they do it with joy, because they know that they're helping each other. And then in return, they'll probably get, and they have gotten, our workers have gotten latrines. Our workers have also gotten homes. And the homes that we have built up to now have been plywood, but with tin roofs that will, and it's a single room. It's usually a 10 by 12.
Because previously they would have lived in what?
Mostly broken down huts, tarps, ripped tarps, you know, tent-like structures, The best type of housing is there is to be cinder block, because after a while, with all the humidity, you know, the wood will rot. And the cinder blocks, you know, are really middle-income housing. And again, every home that I've been into has been a one-room, and that's where they go in to sleep, and that's where they'll go in for safety, you know, with regards to weather and nighttime. And they cook outside on the little charcoal grills, and all of their food, if they can't grow it, and this is a very barren mountainside, you know, they barter or they have to purchase it, and vendors come through. I mean, there's just not a lot of access. There aren't stores. There aren't markets on this mountainside. You know, what comes up the mountain, and there aren't even roads. They're like rocky, unpaved, barren areas that are very, very steep going up, very, very steep going down. But you'll see four-wheel drive, big water trucks. They'll come up the mountain to deliver water.
Wow.
Yeah, so that people can, they have to purchase the water.
Do you have a lot of personal engagement with the folks?
Well, now that I've been there, you know, 6 to 7 years, when I arrive, the young people who knew me at the beginning are there always to greet, always to greet. And some of the young boys are now young men or older teenagers. And because I always bring about 200 protein bars so that when they follow me and they say, I'm hungry, they can get a protein bar.
Do you get those donated?
Those usually I purchase, but
bless you.
I'm always happy to get them donated. And you know what? Last year I finally ate one, and I said to the boys, "This don't taste that good." I was amazed. Their answer was, "We know, but they're good for us."
Wow.
Yeah, and I was like, I'll be darned. I'll be happy to continue to bring these. But I've spread word to the team, and one of the gentlemen, Charlie C., on the team, he goes around and he sends a barrel of them for the workers. And I can't, the people are now very familiar, and you'll see the wrappers on the ground all over the place, I'm sorry to say, because there's no garbage pickup. There's no sanitation. You know, and if you're cooking over charcoal and you're burning your own debris, you can imagine that the air gets very smoky.
Yeah.
Very smoky. So in the medical clinic, I, having been a pulmonary nurse for the last 25 years of my 50 years of nursing, do see a lot of asthma, a lot of lung disease related to that smoke-filled environment that they're so very often can't get away from. Yeah.
You're listening to a conversation with one of my heroes, Mary Lou Connors, about her volunteer work in Haiti. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown. Back in a moment with more.
The Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services seeks to provide a warm welcome for refugees as they arrive at their new home here in the U.S. If you would like to support local refugee resettlement, there are a number of ways you can get involved. You can make a tax-deductible gift to provide refugees with language lessons, employment training and placement, and legal services. You can also raise awareness and funds, volunteer your time, or hire a refugee. For more information, visit irisct.org.
Reader's Theater returns to perform 4,000 Miles, a 2013 Pulitzer Prize finalist written by Amy Herzog. The admission is free at the Durham Public Library on Monday, October 22nd. Come enjoy this dramatic comedy introducing you to four very different characters you may already know.
There comes a time when we hear a certain call, when the world come together as one. There are people dying. Oh, when it's time to lend a hand to life.
Change. We are the Father, God's great big family, and the truth
remember a story, Mary Lou, that you told about a woman. Was she pregnant or did she have?
Oh, there's, when I was there in January, one of the Franciscan friar, the gray Franciscan friars, they come with us, several. And there was a young friar, and he had gone up one of the roads, and he started to preach to the people and through an interpreter. And about at least 50, 60 people gathered. And from a distance, I watched him, and it was so beautiful. He appeared so Christ-like in his long gray robes and his, you know, and just so sincere and telling the people about the love of God and the love of Jesus, the Son. And it was just so incredible. And when he finished, people were tugging at him, "Come to my house, come to my house."
Oh.
But there was one little boy who wouldn't stop. And finally, his name was Mikey, and finally he said, "Yes, I'll go to your house." And I was so relieved when it was on our way back, and we didn't have to keep going up the mountain.
Right. Yeah.
And Mikey brought us very steep pathway. Oh, my goodness. You have to be a billy goat to travel between the homes around here. But we managed to get down the steep and go around the corners. And he brings us in, and we meet his mother. And she was very sick. She had
hard.
And I'm amazed. Look at this little boy brought us to his sick mother. Wow. I'm so glad we came. She had delivered a child, her fourth. 3 months before that, she had postpartum complications.
Mm.
And she was unable to breastfeed. There's no stores to get formula. There's no formula. And so she was feeding the baby cornmeal, which this three-month-old little boy was sipping out of a sippy cup. And he was doing very well, getting chubby, but no nutrition.
Yeah.
And mom wasn't getting any better. Long story, we got medication, we started to treat her.
Like immediately, or did you have to go back to the States?
I went back to the clinic. I actually had brought the right medication for her blood pressure.
Oh, thank God.
And for the fluid retention that she had. And I got a permission to go into Port-au-Prince, into where there was a market, and purchase formula for the baby. And our pediatric nurse also had some. So by the time we left, mom was really feeling better, out of the woods, not necessarily, but on her way. And baby had enough nutritious formula until, you know, we would return in June.
Gosh.
And we went back and forth a few times, so I got to know this wonderful mother who was so concerned about all of her children. What tender, loving care. And I became very fond of her. You know, I was like, what a good mom here. And her son, what a special young boy. Well, anyway, I couldn't wait to go back, and when I got there in June, and go to see her. I had taken pictures of her. You know, they don't have mirrors, or the very few mirrors.
Wow.
So I take pictures of the children, I take pictures of families, and etc. And then I have them developed, and when I go back, I hand them out. And they're all so excited to see their photos, you know, and to have them. So I had these photos of mom with the baby and the little boy, Mikey, with his baby brother and his sister, etc. But the package I had for her with supplies was too heavy for her children to carry back to her. And, you know, in June, it's a lot hotter than in January.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, the heat, it's oppressive. And I know we had to go up the mountainside. So,
how hot does it get?
Oh, it was at least 100 degrees.
What?
But with the humidity
and
the no relief and, you know, being unaccustomed to this, you dehydrate very quickly. And I have a hard time drinking enough water as it is to keep hydrated. And I knew I had to work in the clinic, and I was afraid to put myself in harm's way. So I decided I would take an adultation with me. And I showed her picture to one of the men that I know there. And he looked at it and looked at it, and he said to me, "Oh, el muerto, muerto." And I said,
"No.
What's he talking about?" So I said, no, I didn't know. So I showed it to another man, because it's not that clear, and he's wrong. Well, after four people telling me, and then I had, through an interpreter, I talked to her son. Mom died. She died in March.
Why?
Well, when I asked, the answer was, she got sick and died. You know, there isn't really enough.
And what's to become of this family?
Well, there is a dad. And dad is part of the family, and dad has a job, and which is rare. And that's why I hadn't met him.
So he was always working.
Yes. So two of the boys, they went and they told dad. And on the second to the last day of our clinic, dad arrives. And, oh, I was so happy to meet him and to give him the supplies and explain to him how the, you know, how to mix the powder with the water, the clean water, et cetera, go on and explain. And the other supplies that I had gotten for the rest of the family. And he listened very carefully. He could respond back. But as he turned to leave, he looked at me and he said in his own language, I miss her. And it was such a, you know, it was sad, but it was also an awakening. Guess we can't save everybody, you know, but how do we help? Well, two of the children in this family cannot go to school. Dad doesn't have the money. Mikey had to leave school. And the older sister, the only girl, she was able, dad kept her in school.
Oh, bless him.
But Mikey and his brother weren't able to finish school and take their final test so they could move to the next level. So knowing this, I was able to go to the school principal and give the necessary funds so these two children could finish their year they could advance with their friends. You'll find 12-year-old children in third grade because you can only go to school when you can pay.
Yep.
There's no public school. And the Catholic Haitian Brothers do provide a reasonable, good education and to the children there, but they have to pay. They have to pay their teachers. You know, it's not public. And because of the nutrition problem that I recognized, I branched off from the building team and the medical team in the sense that I decided I would try to get improved nutrition and food production. So I started a 501c nonprofit and called it Helping Haitian Children. In addition,
listeners can't see me shaking my head in astonishment.
Well, I could only do this because others volunteered to help. A former patient of mine who was a retired lawyer said, I'm not accustomed to doing this paperwork, but let me do it. So he did get that 501c, the nonprofit status, which was such a big help so that, you know, we could go. People would like to have tax deduction if they're going to give, and that's a very reasonable request, you know. So now we could provide that. So we started advertising a little bit more in the sense of telling people, and I write thank you notes, and they're on cards made by a Haitian gentleman, and they have a little boy with a fishing pole and a fish hanging off the end of it, and of course we all know that teach a person to fish, okay? Yeah. And my logo is from a Haiti saying, and it goes like this: an empty stomach has no ears. So when the children go to school, the principal of the school run by these Haitian brothers said to me, many of them have not eaten, not only that morning, but the day before. Many here eat every other day.
Wow.
So I said, can we start a lunch program at the school? And, of course, he said, oh, yes, we can. But there are 700 students in this school.
Wow.
So,
Mary Lou.
So I just said, well, you know, God provides. If he wants this to happen. And I said to him, you can use me now. I did say when I first went to Haiti, wow, look at all these retired people and all the good work they're doing. So I made a pact. I said, God, if you keep me healthy, when I retire, I'll go back. Well, he kept his pact, but guess what? I delayed my retirement because I knew what I was going to have to do. And I was scared.
Oh,
untrusting me. So anyway,
stop.
Yeah.
So you got a lunch program going in that school?
We got a lunch program going again.
Amazing.
But I could only afford to stretch myself for 3 days a week. And that meant sending $2,000 a month. And we send it through the summer so that they can do, the principal does a program, because there's nothing for the children to do on this mountainside. There are no...
Can't even play soccer on a mountainside.
There's one level area.
Okay.
And if you get in the way of the soccer players, you could get hurt. They're serious. And you know they play soccer barefoot. Oh, my goodness. They don't have soccer shoes. But, you know, I've learned, you know, if I have to go through it to run real fast.
You're something.
But it's not just me. It's, you know, it's a team.
I know, but yeah. Mary Lou, and your love for these people, it's so plain.
You know,
how can we help? I mean, what's your website? Maybe we can go visit your website and see what we can do to help you.
Of course, our ultimate goal is to have Haitians help Haitians.
I know. But
yeah,
come
and
on, there's got to be something.
We've bought some food grinders. I have 10 women that are grinding corn every day so that the older students that come later in the day can have a nutritious, it's either a porridge called akasan, or they can thin it and make it into a drink. And these women, now when they see me, they complain of their sore arms. And this was all volunteer, and I realize that these are moms that have been brought in from the area. So we started to pay the moms a whopping $20 a month. They were jumping with joy. Well, now this year, I am so happy to say that I have raised the ante. We're now sending $3,000 a month and feeding the children 4 days a week. And I've increased the women's salary to $30 a month.
Wow, a dollar a day. Woohoo.
They're so thrilled. It goes a long way, because they also get, we ship a lot of food, we ship a lot of supplies, and they are on the receiving list. So we make sure that our women, who are so faithful and work so hard, because you know what? Haitians share. They will share with the neighbors who don't have.
If you are just joining us, this is a visit with Mary Lou Connors about her volunteerism in Haiti, in the Connecticut Women's Prison, and more. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown. Back in a moment with more.
So, you know, I'm a dog, and I'm kind of new to this family, but I've noticed a trend. My humans do this thing where they go around and get all my toys and hide them in this basket, but it's always the same basket, and it's always the same place, and then they act so surprised when I find them, but I'm like, hello, that's where you put it last time. Humans are the worst at hide-and-go-seek.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
So I'm a cat, and I just moved in with this new human, and she's got this little toy she's always playing with all day long. Tap, 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 bloop, bloop. She can't put it down. There it is. Oh, and get this. She even talks to it. Last week, she asked it for Chinese, and guess what? Egg rolls showed up like magic. Humans have cool toys.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
You know, what I know about Haiti, and it's very little, but I feel like I know this much, which is that their problems, natural disasters, of course, but also government corruption kind of complicates things. And do you have any fear that the help, the money you send is going to be intercepted?
You know, we have been very fortunate over these years working with the Petit Frère de Saint-Thérèse de l'Enfant Jésus, the little brothers of Saint Teresa of the Infant Jesus. everything has been received. I get a very close accounting of the money spent, and I have been able to validate. Twice I have gone unannounced and gone up to the school at mealtime, and the children are eating and they're so happy. Mm-hmm. And they don't know that, you know, that I'm the person who has started this. They put me to work, and they make me work very hard. Yeah. So sometimes I want to go up there with a sign that says, you know, I don't have to work this hard. But you did ask what is the website, and yes. Don't let me be remiss, because certainly we're always so appreciative, and I can't say how the Haitians are appreciative of what we can do for them in helping them to help themselves. So our website is helpinghaitianchildren.com.
Not org.
A volunteer who is a website person in Minnesota said that this is a fine way to do it. This is the way we can do it. And she volunteered and set up the whole website.
Okay.
And we are, you know, it's a beautiful website. At this point, we have not had any overhead up until recently. So in the past 3 months, I have, because the food that we ship cost $175 a barrel, and I recently sent 6 barrels. So I did take the money from the fund to use to pay for the barrels. So I used $1,200 about to ship to pay for the barrels, because shipping isn't free. But it's a Haitian brothers, one in New York and one in Haiti. And we've been very fortunate that our supplies have been arriving. Yeah. They arrive at various times, but you give or take about 3 months, yeah, and supplies will arrive.
Wow.
Yeah. We haven't had problems with, so to speak, corruption. I have to say, you know, people are survivors in Haiti, and we don't understand that. You know, but I'll give you one quick, cute story about surviving. I know that in general, the people are hungrier in the summertime, because crops don't grow without rain and they don't get it. This is the dry side of the island, this one-third of the island that Columbus called Hispaniola. The other two-thirds are the Dominican Republic, and that's the rainy side. So at any rate, I know whenever we go after the summertime, people are noticeably thinner.
Wow.
So last month I sent $200 to one of our guys on the ground, Haitian gentleman, and I said, use that to buy food to feed the hungriest people that you know. And he did, and he emailed me back. Everything was good, blah, 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 blah. I know we've worked with him for these past 7 years. And he said, but the people want to know, and this is where you'd think I'd know by now, they want to know if this is going to be a monthly
donation. No one would blame them.
I know. And I went, of course, they are thinking ahead. And, if, you know, why didn't I realize that if I'm going to start something, you know, you want to keep it going so that they can have the strength, have the ability to see how they too can. And our next project is going to be trying to get a better irrigation system, you know, so that the people can begin to produce their own better. And high hopes there, but that's just in the beginning phases.
Gosh, you're something.
I know nothing about any of this. I have to count on everybody else. But, you know,
you must be a terrific organizer, though. At the least, it's regiments of people that you've corralled to help with their various gifts. It's just a beautiful thing.
Isn't it so true that everybody has a gift?
Yeah. We can all do something.
That's
you
right.
Know?
Yeah.
I wish I had more listeners.
Oh. The people in my church have been so responsive. The people that I work with, oh my goodness, it just doesn't stop.
Yes, it's so good.
There's a gentleman in my town, and he goes to the town dump, at least once a month. And, you know, people put out supplies in the room where they think people can use this. He has been sending me supplies. He comes, he drops them off in front of my garage. Everything from hula hoops to carriages, you know, to clothing, to pots and pans, to soccer balls. This has been going on for years.
What a dear.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's give a shout out to him. What's his name?
Rick Dubiel.
Rick Dubiel, bless you.
Over and over and over, bless you and bless you, and may God keep you.
Amen.
Yes.
All the days of your life.
Rick's brother passed away a few months back.
Oh, hard.
And I was the lucky recipient of all his brother's size 12 shoes. And I don't know who had any more shoes than this gentleman, but there were lots. Wow. And you know, in Haiti, they don't know their shoe size. But I'll tell you, every pair of shoes counts. And nobody's against used shoes. So through the youth in my church, every year for many years now, we've been sending anywhere from 300 to 500 pairs of shoes. That's our Lent collection.
Goodness.
Yeah, yeah. And
what parish do you attend?
I belong to St. Anne in Avon, Connecticut.
Ah.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and good
everybody
job,
knows
St. Anne.
Me. Yeah, they know me as the shoe lady. Yeah.
I was going to say the Haiti lady. Wow. Go on.
I'm just not sure what else I can say about Haiti, because, of course, once you start me, I could go on for years.
Well, it's time to shift gears anyway.
Good.
Because we've got to cover your other endeavors, my God, and you're just one woman. So what about refugees?
Catholic Charities in Hartford has a division of refugee resettlement. And through the program Just Faith that I volunteered to coordinate a few years back, I went with our little group and we went to see this organization. And lo and behold, were my eyes opened wide to all the new families from third world countries that were coming into the United States under the auspices of Catholic Charities. And they needn't be Catholic. They were being placed and put into apartments, given their basic furniture, English as a second language, you know, health care, services, getting the children up and ready to get to school, the clothing. The needs were incredible, and they are. They continue to be. And I said, you know, Catholic Charities can't answer everything, because after 6 months, the people are supposed to be employed and self-sufficient. You want to come from Burma?
You know,
want to put me in Burma, and after 6 months, well, anyway, so rather than becoming an official volunteer with Catholic Charities, because as an official, you can't put the people in your car for liability, and I understand that. I have no problem with that. So a whole group of us became the unofficial next leg of helping the people. In the beginning, we brought a group of young, well, maybe somewhere from around 9 to 13, University of St. Joseph offered swimming lessons.
Oh.
Isn't that neat?
Yeah.
How important it is to learn to swim.
Really?
So
that's great. Who would have thought of it?
I know. They learned to swim. We started collecting backpacks and school supplies, and then it was furniture, and then but the whole thing was that they felt welcomed, and that's what they keep telling me. You made us feel welcome. We know that we came different. Our clothes, our food, our culture, everything was different. But you made us feel welcome.
When do you sleep?
I sleep very well, and I sleep enough, truly.
Really? Yeah. Gosh. Yeah.
I'm fortunate to be a good sleeper. I can snooze anywhere.
What about the prison?
Prison ministry started for me about 12 years ago, when a couple women came into our church to talk to the men's group about prison ministry. And I was invited, several of us were invited, and I sat there and listened. And you know the corporal works of mercy, well, that last one is visit the imprisoned. And I felt, well, I have covered the others, but not that one. I don't feel I want to ever do that one.
What was it about it? Just too scary?
Just like, what are you going to do in prison? How come, you know, I just had all of these preconceived notions, you know. Anyway, but I decided, well, the only way to maybe I'll do this once.
When was that?
And that was about 15 years ago.
Oh, God.
Yeah. And it became a calling. Because when I first went in, and I'm standing in the auditorium waiting for the prisoners to come in, I looked around this auditorium, and it was also a gym. There were two posters. One was exercise, and the second poster was a poster that I had part of. It was from
A hand in making, you mean?
A hand in working. It was from Tabor House, which was a group home for men with AIDS in Hartford, and I was the nurse that went every week there, and I knew every name on that poster, and I knew it was my invitation. Mm-hmm. And I said, all right, God, hit me over the head. You put me here, and I'll do what I can.
So how is it that you've done this for 15 years? What is it about the work?
You see, you know, you say so little. You say so little. And believe it or not, I am not a person of many words. I'm sorry, but really. The women who come, it's a Christian women's ministry. And we go in as a group of Christian women and all different denominations, yeah. And we pray together. Well, I have never prayed with so many Christian sisters. And this has been such an opening, and it's been such a beautiful way to expand my own prayer world. And to go into the prison and meet these young, they're mostly really yes. young women, who have made wrong choices.
Mostly about drugs.
Mostly about drugs. And to hear their pain and to hear them pray. And that was another 10 steps up in my prayer life.
What do you mean?
Well, their prayers were so sincere and so really from the depths of their hearts and their souls, you know, wanting and being servants for God in an atmosphere that could be very negative, that could be problematic, but yet they chose, and it's not easy, to be a role model in an area where there is a lot of negativity. But these women, they come, we have an annual retreat, which is 3.5 days, and then we go back every month for a prayer and share time. And they come running down the hall. Yeah.
Tell the
us.
Motto of the organization. I love the motto.
Okay. Our motto is listen, listen, love, love. I have driven to Niantic and back and have said nothing while I'm sitting there and have been received with open arms and with gratitude. You gave up your time to come to us. Thank you. Please have a good, safe drive home. There's always, I mean, fear, no, the fear does not enter. It's joy, and it's sharing our joy. As Mother Teresa said, don't bring them your tears. They have enough of their own. Bring them your joy. Oh. And that goes for Haiti, too.
Oh.
Yeah.
Mary Lou, that's so moving.
When I finally read that, it got me to realize, yes, God, you gave me all this. You gave me so much reason to have joy that I'm thrilled now to be able to pass it on. Anything else?
No. That, I think we're going to leave it there, Mary Lou.
Okay.
And I think I remember, I know we're pushing the limit of our time together, but there is one more thing you do that I'm going to prevail upon you to tell, because I have a feeling it's maybe among the most important things you do.
Thank you. I'm a minister of the Eucharist, okay, from my church, and I bring the Holy Eucharist into the hospital and to St. Francis Hospital twice a month and also to a convalescent home in Avon. And I have to tell you that the convalescent home, I have been giving communion. There's one little lady there. She's 102 years old.
Oh.
She doesn't really say much, but when she sees me, she opens her eyes. She makes the sign of the cross. She receives communion. I say, you want communion? Yes. And when I leave, she goes, good, good, good. And I can't tell you, that brings me back every week.
That is
it. Is so amazing. And it's, talk about, you know, joy. you know, you always get back. So it kind of keeps filling my broken vessel because it pours out, but it's got to get back in.
Well, you read my mind. I was going to do an intervention and say, okay, Mary Lou, that's enough now. No more. No more good works. Because you should just go get yourself a regular massage and a mani-pedi, and I don't know what you do for fun. It sounds like your volunteer work is sustaining you quite nicely, but do you do anything just for, I mean, do you have a margarita now and then? Help me out.
I'm allergic to wine. And I wish I wasn't, but I can't. If I drink it, I suffer.
I know a priest who doesn't love wine. It's like, what are you doing in this profession?
I have to honestly say that I love to walk, which means I love to mow the lawn.
Ah.
It's so mindless.
You looked at me like, I know I'm weird. You are weird.
You know, it's just mindless. You go up, you go down, you go up, you go down. I mean, and you're outside, and you know, that's the beauty, again, of being retired, of being able to spend more time in this beautiful outside, this world that we have. I never knew we had so many wonderful days. And just to watch spring blossom, you know, and the clouds. You know, this past couple weeks we have had magnificent, beautiful, those fluffy, gorgeous clouds. And I can just watch them and just say, isn't that grand? And right now, the rain that's feeding our trees that got very dry and desperate for the rain, and I'm watching them pop back up in their leaves. So, yes, these are the things I like.
You make my leaves pop back up. Honest to God. Mary Lou, have you always been this way?
I don't know what always means, but I do know that I used to go feed the chickens, the neighbor's chickens, when I was little. Believe it or not, I'm old. Growing up in Hartford, we had chicken. Neighbors had chicken coops, and I used to, you know, you break the grass and you feed it to the chickens, and then if I got tired, I would fall asleep. So more than once, you know, there were groups of friends running around looking for me because my mother could. I didn't respond to her calls to go home because I was sleeping somewhere. So I think, thank God for peace. I thank God for peace.
Yeah. I thank God for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming to Middletown to tell us. It's inspiring.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. Thank you.
The time flew. Yeah.
It did. Thank you.
Come back anytime.
The Kalmia Garden Fall Farmhouse Concert is scheduled in Durham for the weekend of October 19th through the 21st at the Gassler Farm, 159 Middlefield Road, Durham. Award-winning pianist Timothy Krippner returns to the venue to perform works by Bach, Prokofiev, Liszt, Chopin, and Rachmaninoff. The Friday concert begins at 7 p.m. Saturday and Sunday concerts begin at 4 p.m. The grounds open for picnicking 2 hours before each concert, and Tim Gassler will lead a tour of his extensive gardens 1 hour before each concert. The Kalmia Garden Music and Arts Foundation is in its sixth year of offering chamber music concerts in an intimate farmhouse setting. Tickets at $25 are available online at kalmiagardenmusicandarts.org or by calling 203-215-1942.
I came over to United States. I helped them out when they got arrival to United States, like a new refugee, which they didn't speak any English.
I want to be a very famous person. I want to have a higher education. Freedom.
I hope my mother very fast come, and then my husband.
I saw respect here, I saw honesty here, I saw a good education, and I saw the real love, and they love me a lot.
The Integrated Refugee and Immigrant Services, located in New Haven, seeks to provide a warm welcome for refugees as they arrive at their new home here in the U.S. If you would like to support local refugee resettlement, there are a number of ways you can get involved. You can make a tax-deductible gift to provide refugees with language lessons, employment training and placement, and legal services. You can also donate used furniture, volunteer your time, or hire a refugee. For more information, please visit IRISCT.org.
Next up, Al Dornan, and how we can take a stand for immigration reform.
Say, who is this walking man? Well, the leaves have come to turn in, and the goose has gone to fly, and
bridges awful burning. So don't you let that yearning pass you by. Walking man, the walking man walks. Well, any other man stops and talks, but the walking man walks. Walking man, born to walk, walk on walking man.
Welcome back, Rod Dornan. The last time we talked, we were walking in your neighborhood, as per your daily routine, in support of immigrants and refugees. As we're talking today, you tell me you've just come from the doctor. And when I asked you whether the doctor has given his blessing to your strenuous regimen, what did you tell me?
I don't need his blessing. He can't stop me. So
God bless you. Anything else you want people to know?
I want people to know that they're all welcome to come. This is a family-oriented event. It's going to be a quiet, retrospective walk, and we are inviting parents, fathers and mothers, and their children to join us as we take this walk. The march is going to be on October 21st at 2:00 in the afternoon, and that's a Sunday, so it'll be free from business traffic.
Okay.
So we think in that sense it's going to be okay. We'll try to stay on the sidewalk. It's very difficult to estimate accurately how many people will be there. But we've done a lot of publicity, and we have had a lot of assistance from immigrant organizations around the state who have posted our walk on their website. We have a planning committee for the first time, 12 people, including immigrants, and several immigrant organizations who are co-sponsoring this event. It's also being co-hosted by Gabby Pacheco. Gabby is a nationally known immigrant rights advocate who was instrumental in convincing President Obama to pass DACA. So she's our so-called celebrity co-host.
Wow.
She actually walked with me on July 4th, earlier this year.
Well, I care about your cause, but I care even more about you. So be careful out there, Al.
I'll be careful, but I have to keep going. That's the commitment I made. The issue is you do or do not. There's no try. You just do or do not. So I'll just keep on walking.
That was an episode featuring two people who really walk the talk. If you missed any of it, including information about Al Dornan's upcoming walk in Hartford for immigration reform, you can find it online later this evening at reasonablycatholic.com. Thanks for listening. Be sure to tune in next time when we'll mark All Saints and All Souls Day by celebrating my late great guru, the patron saint of Reasonably Catholic, Father John Baptist Pesch, who would have been 95 years old on November 2nd. I'm Maria Johnson. Thanks for listening. Now stay tuned for Wonderland with DJ Cheshire Cat, followed by Acoustic Blender with Bill Revel.